Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the Boxing Podcast. We are sponsored by 32 Red. I'm your host, Dev Sani, and with me is a man who has established himself as the Vasyl Lomachenko of boxing punditry. He shows us new angles every week. He hits you with stories that you can't see coming, and I can hear him giggling away. It is, of course, Steve Lillis.
Oh, Dev, I see Nixer every week, and I never know what you're going to come up with, and you beat it every week. But comparing me with Vasyl Lomachenko, you are never going to beat it.
Let's see if I can actually better myself every week. Normally you say, oh, Dev, you better yourself every week. And sometimes I think, do you know what? Last week was better. Let's find out if next week is better than this week. Vasyl Lomachenko of punditry. Steve, how are you? You didn't have a marathon, I saw.
Yeah, half marathon on Sunday I did, but I'm not sure it was the best thing to do. I've been laid up ever since with a bad foot. But you know what? I'm a tough guy. I get out there. I do these things. I'm action man. I'm an iron man.
I've got to ask you, when you're running, have you got your headphones on?
No.
Oh,
never
okay.
Never run with headphones on. And why? This one on Sunday, it was six times in the fog around Alton Park motor racing track. So imagine how boring that was.
Yeah. Well, is that a conscious decision, or is it what you think is going to weigh you down, having the headphones on? Like, why do you not?
Conscious decision. Just don't. I've just let my own little world flow by, and I think about boxing, football. Uh-huh. I think about all sorts of things. If I'd known you, you know, you're going away this weekend with Mrs. Sani. If I knew you were going to Austria, I would have been thinking of Austria.
This is good to know. It's interesting. So that's where the College of Knowledge kind of enhances his boxing knowledge, just running along, thinking about it all. So this week, we've got a big show. We have got Hall of Fame boxing promoter Frank Warren. We hear from Anthony Yard's opponent for next week, Travis Reeves. Now, he doesn't really rate Anthony Yard at all. He's not impressed with the Beast from the East, so it'll be interesting to hear what he's got to say. We've got super exciting super middleweight Zach Chelly, and we hear from 9-0 heavyweight sensation Dynamite Daniel Dubois. Keep us in your ears for the next hour or so and enjoy the Boxing Podcast. Well, where better to start than with Hall of Fame boxing promoter Frank Warren? And Steve Lillis found out what he made of Chris Eubank Jr. versus James DeGale over the weekend.
I think it was the most exciting fights. As I said before, the fight, for me, the fight was all about what he had left in the tank, James. And unfortunately, there weren't a lot left there, was there? And that's how it turned out. And obviously, Chris, young junior, he took advantage of the situation and did what he had to do. But James, should seriously think about retiring now. I don't think he's got a lot more to give, that's for sure.
You know, Eubank Jr., he's high profile. He's got the history of Billy Joe Saunders. Is it a natural for him to face Billy Joe Saunders at some stage soon again?
I don't think he fancies it, mate. I don't think he would fancy fighting Bill, in my opinion. I don't think he fancies it. I mean, he knows Bill's got his measure. Now, most guys want to avenge a defeat. He doesn't seem to want to be doing that. That's my opinion. He may prove me wrong, but I don't think he will. He doesn't want the fight. We've offered to it on numerous occasions, and it's just not happened.
Would you make another offer just to see how the land laid with him?
Yeah, I mean, we're considering doing that. We'll speak to Bill and let's see what we come up with.
But you're not holding your breath?
No, I would never hold my breath, anything to do with that. We've been down that road many, many times.
I mean, that history you've got with them, you know, the back and throw you've had with them before, does that make you wary of dealing with them again then?
It's not dealing, you know, you went purse bits and they don't even go through with the purse bits. You know, it's all pretty unsatisfactory, you know, as far as that's concerned. But it is what it is, and we just have to deal with what we've got. If they want the fight, it's not a problem with us making that fight any time. He don't want to fight Billy Joe Saunders. Don't you worry about that. He's not interested in that at all.
Looking ahead to your show next week, Friday 8th of March, Royal Albert Hall, live on BT Sport. Fantastic bill, Frank. Is there any one particular fight you're looking forward to more than anything?
Well, I think it is a cracking bill. It's a good fight card. I'm actually looking forward to all of them. They're all pretty good. I'm looking forward to our heavyweights back in action. I'm looking forward to that. And I say there's some crackers on the undercard, some good little meaningful fights there, some good trade fights.
If we can mention the Anthony Yard who fights Travis Reeves, Reeves seems to be speaking like a winner.
Well, I'm glad he's doing every fight he has, and he will get the best out of Anthony. Anthony's a good fighter. You know, he rises to the occasion. He's done everything that's been asked of him, and this fellow's going to ask more questions of him. And I believe he had the answers. At least we'll find out when the fight takes place.
And is Anthony sort of locked in this confusion for the WBO mandatory with Ramirez, what he's doing as well at the moment? If Ramirez moves up, he'd go in at number one, wouldn't he?
Well, that's what normally happens with the champions, but if they put the fight out, which they're going to do, which I believe they're going to do, to fight Kovalev, then he'll miss his chance.
So how soon are the WBO talking of making Kovalev and Yard?
I think it's imminent.
And then if they put it out, you'll be trying to bring Kovalev here?
Absolutely.
And Daniel Dubar, can he go better when he faces Razvan Kajano and stop him, unlike Nathan Gorman?
We will see. He actually feels he will do, but we will see. But it's good for him. You know, again, his last fight, Kevin Johnson, he fought last time. You know, he asked him some questions. You know, Kevin Johnson's a very good pro, you know, very well respected in the trade. You know, he comes to survive and he makes boxers think. And it was a good fight for Daniel last time around, a really good fight for him. And as I say, I think he will learn from it. And I hope he does the same with this one. This fellow's a tough guy. He can absorb punishment. He stays there most of the time. So he had the fight. He went the distance with Parker. But now let's see if that man can do better than all of that.
And Kajano comes in shape as well. He's not just a journeyman who just gets on a plane straight from a sparring gym or something, is he?
Listen, he's just come off of a 12-round fight, so it's not like he's out of condition. As you say, it's there and he's ready to go.
Liam Williams, Joe Mullender. Obviously, you know, Liam's a big favourite, but Joe's the sort of fighter I should think at least put himself in the fight.
Well, I think what Joe said is where, you know, how the fight's going to look, what Harry wants the fight to be. And that's what his tactics, I thought he'd come up with a great quote at the press conference. He said that his mum jabs better than he does, and I think that says where, you know, where we're going with this one. It's all about, it's going to be all about him trying to get Liam down into the trenches. That's the way he likes to fight. That's what he's going to try and do. And to do that, you've got to come out and you've got to be busy, and he's going to have to be on the front foot all the time. Is that going to suit Liam? You know, Liam's a good boxer. He can punch himself. He can fight. So, you know, they'll get the best out of each other. There's no doubt about that.
And you just mentioned another boxer on the bill, Johnny Garton, who defends his British welterweight title against Chris Jenkins. A classic fighter who's overachieved from his own expectations, isn't he?
Well, he had, but, you know, it's all about what you put in and what you get out of it. He certainly put a lot into it, and he believes in himself, which is great, and he's a lovely fella. You know, he went in the other guy's backyard last time out, won the title. So now, obviously, he'll be wanting to be capitalising on that and to move himself forward. So it's going to be a good little fight.
Are fighters like Johnny Garton an example, maybe, to more talented fighters who might not put it in the gym?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few talented fighters that you look at them and they annoy you. You know, they've only given some on the plate, some of them, and they still manage to ruin it. And then you've got these guys who do it the hard way, and good luck to them, and they deserve everything they get out of the sport because they respect the sport and they respect the opportunities they get.
And then before we let you go, Frank, quick mention of 23rd of March, you're in Leicester, Sam Bowen in action.
Yeah, Sam, you know, he's another guy who looks like he's done it the hard way, lovely fella, and I'm looking forward to, you know, looking forward to seeing him in action.
There also seems to be a bit of a buzz now about Sam Maxwell, who's on that bill. I take it you're just going to push full steam ahead with him now.
Yeah, he's not a youngster, and I don't think that being disrespectful to him. He's a consummate professional. He knows what he wants, and we're going to deliver it for him. I'm going to deliver it. He's a good lad, and I like him, and he's, you know, we're going to keep him very busy.
Well, Steve, lots to digest there. I like the idea of Saunders versus Eubank, the rematch, but Frank says he doesn't think Eubank fancies it. What do you make of that?
Well, I think Frank has had a lot of dealings with the Eubanks over the Eubank family over the years. There's been the purse bid fights of when Eubank was going to fight Tom Langford. Frank won the purse bids. They went to all the bother of winning them. Then they pulled out from that fight. And there's been other things. I think they've been close on a few times and they've fallen through. And I think Frank just has grown very tired of dealing with Eubank, particularly Eubank's father. And I think that's why he's very sceptical about the rematch taking place. And I think he would take some convincing that Eubank Jr. really wanted the fight before he goes right the way down to Avenues again and is on the brink of arranging press conferences. But Eubank is a fighting man. It's a chance for him to erase one of only two blemishes on his record. It's one he felt angry about at the time when the decision went against him. And the money will be fantastic. It will be mainstream. Absolutely, yeah. Mainstream. So for Eubank, surely he wants to correct that. He can't correct the George Groves loss because, you know, Groves has retired and retired for good, it seems. Any proud fighter wants to end any controversy and cancel it out. And this is what Chris Eubank Jr. should want to do. But whether it's going to happen, we don't know. Chris is talking of moving back down to middleweight. But, you know, it might just be the most lucrative and biggest fight for him could be Billy Joe Saunders.
I think undoubtedly it is the biggest fight out there for him. It's probably the most lucrative fight out there right now for Billy Joe Saunders as well. This fight is a monster. I heard Steve Bunce talking about it on his podcast. Yeah, shout out to Steve Bunce's podcast as well. A good listen. But he says, other than Joshua against Fury, it's the biggest fight out there between two Brits that can be made. And I make him right. This fight is a monster now. And Eubank, after the weekend, he now has himself a signature win. He beat, yes, it was a faded James DeGale, but he still got the win over him. And Steve, let's look at that now. So what you watched the fight. What did you make of it?
Well, that's a fantastic point. He got the win, Dev. He got the signature win. Because last week I was saying every time we've expected the signature win, he hasn't delivered. So that's a very valid point you make there. And I couldn't agree more with you there on that. But going back to Eubank DeGale, I think Eubank Jr. has improved under Nate Vasquez training him. Not to say he's anything near the best super middleweight in the world. But James DeGale, we said he wasn't the same fighter. And that there was nothing in the tank last week. It was a shot fighter we saw in the ring last Saturday night. But I'm not going to knock Eubank Jr. Yeah. He was right place, right time, and well done to him. He won the fight convincingly. He boxed well.
Well, that's it, Steve. I also do not want to discredit Chris Eubank Jr. at all. Yes, DeGale was faded. You used the word shot there as well. Perhaps he was, and maybe his performance showed that. I don't want to take any credit away from Eubank here. You see this in boxing over and over again. Signature wins do tend to come at the right place, right time. Look at Ricky Hatton against Kostyuzu. That's Ricky Hatton's best win. Was that the best Kostyuzu? I don't think so. What's Anthony Joshua's best win? Vladimir Klitschko, coming off a loss, coming after, you know, an 18-month layoff. That's his signature win right now. It's right place, right time. And Eubank could well kick on from this and make a bit of an impression.
And I really hope that Chris Eubank Jr. really goes on and kicks on his career now, because if he's successful, it's good for boxing because he's mainstream.
And also on the bill was Olympic silver medalist British heavyweight Joe Joyce, who beat Bermain Stiverne. What did you make of that, Steve?
Joe's an exciting heavyweight. I think there's very good fighters he will beat out there. But, you know, there's still something to do to convince me that he's the better than the likes of Fury, Joshua, even and Deontay Wilder. He's very good, but I'll still take some convincing. What he has got is a superb engine. He's got the maddest fitness you've ever seen for a heavyweight. But I've seen performances, and, you know, I know you're going back to the amateur days, but this was the WSB when he fought Alexander Usyk, and Usyk just toyed with him for 5 rounds.
Yeah, you see that. And, you know, he got the win. It's a good name on his resume, and he stopped Bermain Stiverne. Deontay Wilder stopped Bermain Stiverne. But he did get tagged a fair bit as well, Joe Joyce. So I don't know if that's a case of he just took Stiverne lightly and, you know, he was happy to just take his power. But there was a couple of times he really had to stop and think about what was coming back, and there didn't really seem to be much defence from him. So you just think to yourself, he was talking before this about fighting Luis Ortiz, or the team around him were moving towards Ortiz, it would appear. I would say that's now not the plan immediately for Joe Joyce.
No, I mean, look, they're in a hurry with him, that's for sure. What you've got to remember with Joe Joyce is that although he hasn't had too many professional fights, he had a fantastically long amateur career. And in that WSB, he was in that every week, every other week for 2-3 years. I think he lost once or twice in about 15 or 16 fights in the WSB. And in the WSB, he's beating better people than Bermain Stiverne.
You've got to take that
WSB experience. So he'll be let off the leash a lot quicker than what you think. And I wouldn't be shocked if they went the Luis Ortiz route before the end of the year. I see there's now talk of him fighting Manuel Char, which is a ridiculous fight. Look, it's not ridiculous because it gets him a belt, but it's a mismatch. You know, he will crush Char in 4 or 5 rounds. But I wouldn't be surprised if he went down that Luis Ortiz route. They're obviously in a hurry with him.
But we talk about this every week. The regular champ, the super champ. It feels like we talk about it every week. If he beats Manuel Char, if he gets that fight, he's now the WBA gold champion. So he's forcing a shot at Manuel Char. He wins that title off him. He's a world heavyweight champion, and he is. You know, if Manny Pacquiao's a welterweight champion, if Canelo Alvarez is a super middleweight champion, Joe Joyce will be a world heavyweight champion, like it or not, Steve Lillis. I know you don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it. He'll be the WBA regular. You called him WBA gold or WBA regular. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. What I don't mind is the money they earn from having these belts. What I don't like is 4 world champions is more than enough without having 2 or 3 from each governing body. I get it. They need to make a few quid, these governing bodies, but it's more than enough money to go round in boxing. It does my shedding. It really does my shedding.
So you don't like that the WBA gold has added to this golden era of heavyweight boxing, no?
WBA gold, please. Dev, you're trying to wind me up this week. You're trying to fire me right up this week, but I'm not having these WBA regular titles. Good luck to Joe if he gets the belt, because it's money for him. But don't tell me he's a world champion.
Final one, Steve, just on that show from the weekend. So Lee Selby made his lightweight debut. Talk to me.
You know what? I think he just about won the fight. I know, I'm in a minority here, but, he didn't have the greatest power at featherweight, Dev. It was always, fantastic skill, fantastic reactions that got him through to a very, very good level at featherweight, where you could argue him being the best out there.
Yeah.
But at lightweight, the real elite at lightweight are just going to walk through him. I wonder, I get why he had to leave featherweight. I know Barry Jones was advocating him jumping 2 weights because of his size. I think if he's going to go up a weight, it has to be super featherweight. I'd like to see him have a go at that weight, but he doesn't want too many fights like that. The opponent was decent, was a good lightweight, don't get me wrong, but there are better lightweights out there who will make it a lot harder for him. He has got to move up in weight, but I'd like to see him have a go at super featherweight, and it wasn't good to see him busted up like that.
Yeah, it felt like one of them where, and I don't think it did happen this time, but it felt like one of those photos of Lee Selby's face with blood everywhere where everyone tweets, oh, you don't play boxing, one of them annoying tweets that get sent out by, Boxing for All or, accounts like that. But yeah, he carried his power or lack of power up to 135 pounds, and it wasn't the best performance, but hey, maybe super feather is the weight for him. Maybe that's the sweet spot.
Yeah, I'd like to see him have a go at that weight. I'm really not sure he can do things at lightweight, but we're gonna have to forget, for him to win a world title at lightweight, it really would have to be the right sort of opponent he's facing for that. But you wouldn't back him against any of the current lightweights, would you? The elite ones.
No, probably not, Steve, but we look forward to seeing the next move of Lee Selby, Joe Joyce, Chris Eubank, and do you know what? I want Saunders Eubank. I want that fight more than anything. I want it. Steve, I know you want it. You want it, didn't you?
Love to see that fight again. Ooh. Isn't just the fight to see, what Billy Joe could do to him now, how much Eubank has improved. There's all sorts of questions and conundrums you could put in that fight. Who will win and why? But also, the build-up will be something else. And, something you keep going back to, Devin, you mentioned, it's the entertainment business. And I tell you what, that build-up would be entertaining.
Baltimore light heavyweight Travis Reeves has stepped in to replace Mehdi Ammar next Friday at the Royal Albert Hall and take on 17-0 Anthony Yard. Is he worried about the beast? Not in the slightest. Here's Travis Reeves with Steve Lillis.
First of all, Travis, is Anthony Yard an opponent you know? Because I've seen your name linked with him in the past.
Well, I know, only thing I know about him is that we were scheduled to fight two times before, and the fight never took place for some reason.
Well, he seems to knock people out all the time. All but one of his opponents have failed to hear the final bell. Do you think you're the man to hold off his explosive power?
Man, I'm not worried about Yard, man. I'm not worried about Yard. Yard, you know, from a fan perspective, everybody get caught up in the hype. But most of those guys he fought, man, they was dead, man.
Do you believe he's a product of hype then? You know, where Frank Warren and his team have hyped him up to be the star that he's not, because I think he's number one or two mandatory for the WBO title.
Yeah, well, you know, this is no disrespect to Frank, because Frank is one of the legends in the game. And, you know, I got a lot of respect for Frank. But, I mean, we know how boxing works. You know, it's like a lot of these guys, you know, you're with the right people, you can get put in the right position.
I mean, there has been criticism of his opponents in America and the world ranking that he has. Do you feel that criticism is justified? Or do you feel that the fans that are criticising aren't getting the plot of how boxing works, as you know, the system you just referred to?
Well, me being a fighter myself, I'm not going to criticise Yard, you know, because as a fighter, you know, we come to fight. And we're going to just fight whoever you put in front of us. And, you know, we're going to get the job done. So, you know, it's a lot of time, it's your handlers that, you know, it's a business. And people have money invested in these guys. You know, so I don't criticize him. I just, you know, I just understand the hype and for them to try to build up a fighter, they have to present some type of hype. But I'm coming to fight, though.
Would he be out of place taking that step up to Kovalev right now, do you think?
Yeah, I think he definitely is out of place, you know, stepping up to Kovalev right now at this time.
What attributes do you have that's going to cause him problems when you come to London in a couple of weeks?
I mean, if you look at you know, the fighters that's been coming out of Baltimore, we just different. You know, we're a different breed, and you know, we don't come to lay down. I mean, we got a strong boxing history. You know, Vincent Pettaway, Hossein Rockman, Javante Davis, Jared Hurd. I mean, we come to fight. You know, we don't come to lay down. Win, lose, or draw, you're going to know we hit.
Hey, and look what happened when another Baltimore man, as you mentioned there, Hossein Rockman, fought Lennox Lewis for the first time. Nobody expected that, did they?
Right, and Hossein, you know, Hossein Rockman works with me, so he'll actually be there with us.
Oh, is he one of your trainers, Hossein?
Yeah.
So what attributes have you got that will cause problems for him, besides coming from Baltimore?
Man, you know, you got to wait and see. You know, you got to wait and see. I can't really give you too much. But it's definitely going to be an exciting fight, I can promise you that.
In Anthony's previous fights, he's never really had an opponent who might have got in his face at a press conference or a weigh-in, you know, tried to get into his head before a fight. Are you the sort of fighter that might try that when you come to London?
Nah, man. I love the people in London. I respect, you know, the London. To me, that's just like a circus. You know, there's no reason. We're going to fight when we get in the ring. We both got to be gentlemen. And we both fight as professional fighters, so we got to act professional.
Tell us why you're the man to beat Anthony Yard and, you know, end the hype.
why wouldn't I be?
Well, I'm asking you why you think you are. You know, as you say, you haven't seen a lot of Yard. We haven't seen a lot of you. We've seen your impressive record, and what you've done after coming back from 15 years is impressive. You know, but, you know, why, in your opinion, are you the man to beat him?
I feel, you know, I got the skills. I mean, I feel that I faced people like Yard already, but I don't feel that Yard faced anyone like me before.
How do you think the guys you've beaten compare with the guys that Anthony's beaten?
I feel that everyone Anthony beat, I would have knocked out. So that's why I'm not overly concerned or worried about him, because I would have did the same thing to the guys that he fought.
And when you come over next week, will it be your first time in London?
Yeah, it'll be my first time in London.
And you looking forward to seeing the city a bit after the fight?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, man. Like I said, I want to thank, you know, Frank Warren, because I know Frank Warren is actually, you know, Frank wanted this fight to happen before. You know, like I said, I got a number of respect for y'all as far as that aspect, but, you know, I guess his trainer and manager didn't feel the fight was appropriate at the time. Yeah. So they know, his trainer knows that Yard is in for a fight. He knows that.
And the venue you're fighting in, the Royal Albert Hall, I don't know if you know anything about it. It's an historic building in London where Muhammad Ali actually boxed exhibitions. Is it something that appeals to you, boxing there?
Yes, absolutely. It absolutely does. It really does. I follow boxing. My trainer fought in London before. My other trainer, Vernon Mason, he fought in London before. And, you know, London has been good to boxing. You know, London has played a real, very important part in the history of boxing. So I really look forward to fighting and putting on a show for the people in London.
And have you got a message for anyone who might be coming to the Albert Hall, what they can look forward to when in the venue or if they're watching on BT Sport?
Man, I just want everybody to know to, you know, tune in. And, you know, if you've been wondering what Anthony Yard got, you're going to have to show what he got come March 8th. You know, you're going to have to show what he got. I'm not coming to lay down. It's going to be a fight. It's going to be in for a fight.
Well, Steve, he's talking a good game, but, you know, it would be a big upset, really, wouldn't it, if he was to slay the beast?
Oh, an upset. It would be a monumental upset. You know, Anthony's closing in on a world title fight now. So when you're closing in on a world title fight where it's perhaps one or two fights away, and, you know, it could be in the mandatory position, you're not giving Murderer's Row. It isn't going to be brought in for you. But you know what? I had that time on the telephone with Travis, and he convinced me he's going to come here and give it his all. He knows this is his one chance to get into the limelight in the light heavyweight division. And I'm not going to back against Anthony Yard, but I think Travis Reeves will go in there and give it his all. And before he gets beaten, he'll be going out on his shield. I promise you that.
Good. I hope so. We, as Frank Warren said, you know, we want to see Yard given a fight. And if Travis Reeves is going to be the man to give him that fight, to give him that kind of preparation before, you know, that mandatory is called for Kovalev, at some point, you've got to just do it. And this could be the point now. It feels like there's a point of no return now, where if that Kovalev mandatory is called, Yard's got to go and he's got to fight him.
Of course he has. There is no turning back now. He's number one in the world. You know, he's been in that number one, number two in the world. He's been around that for a year. If that mandatory gets called, and it's very, very soon, Anthony or his handlers cannot turn around and say no.
9-0 heavyweight sensation Daniel Dubois is back in action next Friday at the Royal Albert Hall. He takes on Ramzan Kadyrov, former world title challenger, and it's boxing's big return to the Royal Albert Hall. It's only the second time they've been there in 20-odd years. Now, Richard Hubbard popped down to the Peacock Gym to find out how preparation was going and what Dubois thinks of the likes of Nathan Gorman, Derek Chisora, and a bit of Dillian White, and actually, who he thinks is the best heavyweight in the world.
Looking ahead to your next fight, your opponent, Ramzan Kadyrov, he's had a couple of things to say this week that I'm going to put to you. First of all, I mean, he seems to say, but this fight isn't going to end well for you. What do you say to that?
It's a good fight. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to him backing up, bringing what he says, doing what he says he's going to do, and backing up his word, seeing if he's a man to his word.
I mean, another thing he added, he thinks, but they've made a serious error putting you in with him. I mean, you haven't fought anyone as big as him who has power of his own.
I'm sure it won't come down to that. It's come down who's a better man on the night. Size really don't count. I'll cut them down. You know, the taller they come, the harder they fall, they say. So I'm looking forward to getting in there and really showing what I can do and putting on him and breaking him down.
Is it the sort of challenge, the fact that you know someone's going to come and be awkward, is it the sort of thing you're going to enjoy?
Definitely. I enjoy every fight, so whatever challenge he's going to bring, I'll embrace it.
But essentially, what you are looking for on the night is to, like you said before, is make a big statement and a big knockout of a former world title challenger. It will look good on the resume, won't it?
Definitely. It's something that I'm working towards, and I'm at that point in my career where every fight's a must. It's like a world title for me, and I have to be my best and put on my best performance.
I want to ask you about the British scene and how you think it's looking at the moment. I mean, firstly, did you watch Joe Joyce at the weekend?
Yeah, I saw the fight. Joe was just doing what he does. He's a fit guy. I don't think he's going to get much better, but he's just used his fitness. And, you know, he was fighting on over the hill, Bermain Stiverne. He's 40 years old, and, you know, fair play to him. He came in, gave it a go, and landed a few big shots on Joe. But I just think he's passed it, and Joe caught him at the right time.
You think he might get exposed against his first live opponent, if you like?
Maybe not. You know, we'll see. He's in a run of form of his own. You know, he's won all his fights. But it's a fight that, you know, look down the line, could happen, me against Joe Joyce.
I'll ask you about your rival, if you like, in inverted commas, Nathan Gorman. Is he just making the most noise about it?
It seems that way, but I don't really think he's making that much noise about it. We'll see, you know. It's a good fight I look forward to. After this one, I've got to take care of business first on March 8th. So whatever comes my way, whatever comes next, I'm ready for.
Nathan tells anyone that will listen is that he wants the fight, he'll take the fight. But surely the same applies to you just don't say it so much.
Yeah, sure. That's the case. I'll fight anyone. And I think we're both won all our fights so far. We're both at the same sort of stage. So it's a good fight. And Frank Warren's he's the guy that can make it happen. And when the time's right, it will happen.
Nathan refers to hundreds or thousands of rounds of sparring, but you two are supposed to have done at the Institute in Sheffield, where he thinks he's got your number or got you worked out. Was there something that happened in that sparring that should have given this sort of confidence?
Nothing at all, really. It's pretty... I can't really recall the sparring too well, but I was only making my way up to heavyweight at the time, and we were very good spars, very good matches, because, you know, we were sort of at that level. I was just wanting to get on the GB squad, and I saw him in my way, I guess. So, yeah, we probably did go at it a few rounds, but nothing spectacular.
Looking ahead to sort of potential future opponents for yourself, would like a tough old gatekeeper, say a British one, such as Derek Chisora, be an ideal opponent for you at the moment? Is that something that would interest you?
I think that's a good fight. In a few months' time, that's a good fight. I think they're not too far off, and, you know, I keep saying this, but, you know, they're not that far off, these fighters. And I think a few good consistent performances, I'll be in with the likes of the Chisoras, and I really just got to focus down and keep working hard and stay on my A game, really.
Do you think that sort of fight, because he's been in with everyone without necessarily winning, it'd probably be a good measuring stick for you?
Definitely. Chisora is he's an old war horse, so he'll test you 100%. He showed that against Dillon, and any fight he faces, he gives them a good run for their money. So I would definitely be a fight I'd relish when the time's right.
Last question. By general consensus, the top three heavyweights in the world at the moment are Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua. In your opinion, who do you see as top dog in the division?
I don't know. I can't really say. You know, they've all proven their worth. Tyson, Joshua. I'd probably go with AJ because if he has all the belts, he's probably number one ranked. But I don't know. We need to see them all fight each other and see who comes out on top. See who's the last man standing.
Steve, I'll tell you what, you scratch away a little bit. Once he gets comfortable talking to you or comfortable in front of the camera, there is a bit of fire there. He says some quotable things, Daniel Dubois, and he's getting better at delivering them.
Yeah, look, he's still a young man. So, you know, at first there wasn't a lot coming out, but obviously he's talking to Richard there, who he knows very well.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's letting out that little bit more than he normally would. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, you can tell from there, you almost feel he's not saying, I want to go and knock everyone out in Britain. But you get that feeling that he's looking at people. Chisora, I'd like to do him. Yeah. Dave Allen, I'd like to do him. You know, Nathan Gorman, I really want to do him because he's winding me up.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a monster fight. And I reckon we'll see that this year, by the way. I really do.
Oh, but really? I really think we're going to wait another year or so for that. You know, I think Frank will make that happen. I mean, there really is plenty of bounty on the table for both men. But you know what? You've got to remember here with Daniel, he still hasn't even had his 10 professional fights. And we're pushing him on to guys like Chisora, Dave Allen. You know, that's how good he is. You know, the solid British fighters, you're wanting to see him fight. I'd back him tomorrow against Chisora. You know, I just think we were talking earlier about right fight, right time. And that might be it. You know, I think Derek has lost 9 times now. You know, and he's, you know, the last three losses, you know, two against Dillian White and the one he had in Monte Carlo against Cabayel. They were tough, hard fights he's had. Dave Allen, I'd fancy him against. I think Dave would really give him rounds because he's tough. David Price, why not that fight?
Yeah, exactly. And do you know what it feels like with Dave Allen, with Derek Chisora, with David Price? And I say this with the utmost respect, it's almost like you've got to pay a bounty to hire them to put them on your record, kind of. It's almost like chins for hire in the most respectable way. You know, you've got Dave Allen there, you left. If you want to have him on your record, if you want to knock him out, you've got to pay X amount. David Price, you know, he's a bigger name in boxing. You want to get him, you want to knock him out, pay this much. Derek Chisora, he's going to come at a premium. He's going to cost you this much. That's kind of how it feels with this, Steve.
But that's what boxing is, particularly in the heavyweight division. You know, those guys and their connections will know. Hold on here. Here's Daniel Dubois, who's been given the real treatment by Frank Warren and by BT Sport. They really fancy him to be the first world heavyweight champion. BT almost built from scratch. I know Daniel had a couple fights on Box Nation, but so they'll know. What them guys will know. They'll know there's money in those fights, and guys like Derek will certainly know. The next loss is possibly the last, and certainly for David Price, the next loss will be the last. Dave Allen's one of these guys I think will box forever, you know. But for Chisora and Price, their next loss at any sort of a good level is possibly the last.
Yeah, you say that. We've been saying that for years, Steve. You think Chisora's out of his nine lives now, but he'll come back. He'll be boxing till he's about 50. I'm sure he will be.
He's used nine lives up in his defeats, isn't he? So that could possibly be the temp. So, you know, but what Derek will know is there's a value to him. So for, you know, a fighter to have his name on his record.
And by the way, Chisora was doing very well in that fight against Dillian White. So I don't think he's quite as over the hill as maybe we'd initially make out. One thing that I'd say here is Daniel Dubois is fighting Razvan Kajanu next Friday. Now, to the naked eye, Kajanu, what does that mean? It doesn't look like it means a lot. It's a foreign name. However, let's look at this closely. He fought Joseph Parker, and that was a world title defense of Joseph Parker. That was Joseph Parker's 23rd fight. He's fought Luis Ortiz. That was Luis Ortiz's 30th fight. Daniel Dubois is about to take him on in his 10th fight. He's 21 years old. This is not soft matchmaking. This is difficult matchmaking. This is where you find out, can he knock him out? How good is Daniel Dubois? Is he going to go all the way? What statement can he make? I'm really impressed with this.
Yeah, look, it was the same for Nathan Gorman. You know, he went into the Gorman fight, Razvan Kajanu, in December on the back of the losses to Ortiz and Parker. I know the Ortiz loss was a KO loss, but Ortiz is a serious, serious puncher. Yeah. And you know what? He come in decent shape. He was only a couple pounds more than what he weighed against Ortiz and Parker. Mm-hmm. He come here in shape, and Gorman never once looked like getting him out the way. He knows how to fiddle his way around the ring. And you know what this is? You know, I don't think he beats Dubois, but again, it's a tremendous learning fight for Dubois. People go on about the Kevin Johnson fight, then, you know, where Dubois was taking the distance for the first time. These are tremendous learning development fights. And in Kajanu and Johnson, Daniel would have learned more in any rounds he has against them than his previous 8 professional fights.
Yeah, very true. And now, Steve, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a kind of, let's play a bit of fantasy boxing, right? So, you are in charge of Daniel Dubois for the next year. You're his promoter. Who does he fight? Give him to me. Give me some names. Who do you want him in with next? Who do you want him in with by the time we get to February 2020? Talk to me.
Dev, it's all about getting to Gorman against Dubois when everybody knows who they are. For that to happen, I want to see Daniel fighting men like Derek Chisora, David Allen in these next couple of fights.
Well, yeah, hopefully you're right, Steve. Hopefully we get to see those fights very soon. But before any of that, Daniel Dubois faces off with Razvan Kajanu next Friday, live on BT Sport from London's iconic Royal Albert Hall. Now, what if I were to tell you there was an exciting British super middleweight boxer with the same name as his father, who also happens to be an eccentric former boxer? Now, you'd say to me, Dev, you're talking about Chris Eubank Jr. again, aren't you? And I'd say to you, no, I'm talking about Zach Chelly. Here's the 5-0 super middleweight with Steve Lillis.
Zach, thanks for joining us on the boxing podcast this week, and I understand you're back in action in April.
Yeah, I believe so. I heard that was recently, I just heard the 13th of April, I hope. That's what I'm hoping for, under Billy Joshua's undercard. My next fight is actually on the 9th of March, so less than under 2 weeks, just a warm-up fight on a Mark Pryor show.
Oh, where's that? Where? Tell us about that fight.
That'll be in Watford. I'm not sure who the opponent is yet, but that'll be in Watford.
And then after that, hopefully, a bigger test on the Billy Joe Saunders undercard at Wembley Arena.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
What was it like last October, so early in your career, having a rivalry with a boxer? You know, when you've given the build-up to the Umar Sadiq fight? Because it brought you a lot of attention.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed it because you get to see the big fighters, do similar things, and then that made me feel like I was a big fighter fighting for something people wanted to watch, not just a normal journeyman. People wanted to see the fight, people enjoy the rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, and does it hold you in good stead for later in your career when there'll hopefully be even bigger rivalries?
Yeah, I believe so. It's, practice. It was a small one, and hopefully in the future there'll be bigger ones.
I mean, how pleased are you with your progress, considering you only had 5 fights and you've beaten someone who also had a lot written about in Umar Sadiq?
Yeah, I do wish I had more fights. I've been pro for 2 years, but hopefully this year will be the year which pushes me forward and makes up for those for last year.
When you look at the British super middleweight division, who is it you look up as a possible, your next sort of big opponent, shall we say?
Well, you never know, 2 years' time. I think, well, British title, Zach Parker, he's another Zach, and I want to prove I'm the only Zach, so I'd like to go for that one. And if that one succeeds, Eubank Jr., he seems pretty, he did a good fight. I believe he did a good fight, but James Agut wasn't his best. I couldn't see James Agut's best, but, fair play to Eubank, he did well.
I mean, when you say Zach Parker, I mean, how far do you think you are off Zach? Because I think he's had 17 or 18 fights.
Yeah, I don't think I'm too far from him. I believe if I fight for Southern Area this year, or even if I win English title, it could be possible this year. Next year I could fight Zach Parker for the British.
When I listen to you speak and your father speak, do you think you're quite refreshing in the way that you're looking for so many good fights so early in your professional career? You're still a very young man.
Yeah, I believe if you're able to do it now, why not go for it? I believe I'm able to do it now, so I'd like to go for it. And my father, my father is like my mini promoter, He's boosting me with everyone, yeah.
Do you feel pressure when your dad says things like, even when you turned over, he was saying he'll beat any light heavyweight in Britain. You must feel a bit of pressure.
Yeah, that's true. My dad does talking, so I got to do the fighting. So I tell him that as well. I said, the more you speak, the harder I got to do, which makes me train harder to prove people right.
Did you wish, though, sometimes you could tell Zach Senior, look, Dad, just give it a rest for a few months?
Nah, it's my dad, let him do what he does. So far, it's all been good for me, so why not let it carry on?
Do you think, though, that could bring you detractors where people might think, listen to his dad again, blowing him up, he's only had 5 fights?
Yeah, I mean, that has happened, but so far, I've proved myself. So far, I've only had 5 fights, and I've beaten someone who people thought would beat me. He thought he was the boxer, and I was the fighter, and I proved I was a boxer and a fighter. And hopefully, more chance that this come and then people start to realise maybe my father's talking the truth.
Do you ever see yourself getting to the stage and fighting a Chris Eubank Jr., or do you think they may have moved on by the time you get to that stage?
But Eubank, he's not 30 yet, is he? He's not too old. I mean, you never know, in the 3 years' time, I could be there. I get to go for it. Why not?
But, you think the next big one might be Zach Parker.
Yeah, but if he still has the British title by when I go for it, then yeah, why not? He should be the one.
So are you still doing your university studies?
Yeah, I actually took a break from my lecture just to speak, so yeah.
So how much longer you got left at university, Zach?
Well, I'm just about to finish. This year I'll be finishing second year in June and just one more year after that. But if I do get title fights and big titles, I could take a year off.
Is that something you're considering, having a year out now?
Yeah, just depends what type of fights I get.
Yeah, I gotta say, if you get a title fight and you need a full 12-week camp, it must be hard enough doubling up now as it is.
Well, honestly, I'm actually used to training and studying at the same time, because most boxers, what they would do is they would work and they would box at the same time, wouldn't they? But for me, I just study and box, so it takes time to get your mind off. You can't be full on boxing 24/7.
What will your fellow students think of you, particularly, say, when they're going to have a mad night out on a Friday night and you've got to go to the gym?
Yeah, they don't. They think... Well, when I tell people I'm a boxer, I usually get comments, oh, yeah, my brother does boxing as well. He's had a couple of fights. They don't really understand, you know, the level I'm boxing at. But then once they see me fight on TV or PT Sports, then they start to realise that this is like a job. This is my job. This is my life.
What was the reaction like at university after you fought on BT against Umar Sadiq?
Yeah, it was great. A lot of people come up to me saying, oh, I saw you on TV, I saw you fight on BT Sports, and yeah, congratulated me, and I'm looking forward to my next fight and asking me when my next fight is, and they want to come to it.
Yeah, so once again, just tell us when you're out next, in case there's anybody listening who wants to come and buy a ticket for Watford. Can you tell us a bit about the show?
9th of March, Watford Leisure Centre. And in fact, Umar Sadiq was fighting on that bill as well, just found out, so yeah.
Have you and Umar spoken since the fight? Are you friends now, or is it still that niggling rivalry?
Yeah, there's no bad blood between them. I mean, it's just boxing, you know. I've done my job and that's it.
Steve, I'm a fan of Zach Celli. I think he's going to be one of Frank Warren's real breakout youngsters over the next couple of years.
I'm with you. I like him a hell of a lot. He's always in exciting fights. He looks the part. He talks well. And you know what? So early in his career, 5 fights in, so for him and Umar Sadiq to fight in a bit of a grudge match over 8 rounds, that takes some doing for a 21-year-old man. I mean, although Umar had only had 3 amateur fights, he was vastly more experienced as an amateur on the international stage and around Britain. And for him to take that fight after 5 fights takes some doing. And it's a whole mad story, the whole Celli thing. He's at university. His dad's a lovable madman. I remember when he turned pro, his dad was saying he'll beat any light heavyweight in Britain at the time. I mean, it reminded me of Audley Harrison saying I could beat any heavyweight in Britain in no time. But that was Audley Harrison. He'd won a gold medal at the Olympics.
Yeah.
This was a kid who's had next to no experience. And you've got his dad, before he's had his debut, saying he'll knock out any light heavyweight in Britain. So look, they're the sort of people we want him in boxing, because they're characters. But what makes it even better is he can fight a bit as well. And I think we're going to see that over the next couple of years. But he's had that rivalry with Umar Sadiq, and he says the right things. I only want people who have got things. Thing with this kid, when he says this, he means it. But we've got to remember, he's only 21. He's only had 5 fights. I think we can, you know, hold the horse in a bit here.
Well, I look forward to seeing the 6th fight. I like, he's, you know, Eubank used to put up those videos of him, you know, doing 98 punch combos on the punching machine. Zach Celli does things like that as well. And, you know, whilst you're not going to use that in a fight, the much vaunted 98 punch combo, it's going to get you a bit of attention on social media. These kind of clips do very well. And he's got the looks, actually. He's got the whole junior-senior thing going on. There's parallels there with the Eubanks and the Cellis. And I'm looking forward to watching how this story unfolds. Keep your eyes peeled on BT Sport for this one. Listeners, can you hear that? That is the bee that Steve Lillis has in his bonnet. Yes, it's that time of the week again when I'm asking you, Steve, I'm imploring you. I want to know what you're talking about, Lillis.
Ah, I'm talking about Chris Eubank Sr. Ah, Dev. And you know what? I don't think Chris likes me. He once told me before the Michael Watson fight at White Hart Lane, I could crawl under a snake with a top hat on. So I don't think he's my biggest fan, but I love the guy. I think he's been a great fighter. I think he's a great character, but I'm just got the raving hump of him. I just feel that after his son's fantastic triumph last weekend against James DeGale, he just has to be central to every plot. He was the first in the ring when he never trained him. You know, he's wanting an apology from his son after the victory that will thank him in 20 years time for what he'd done for him. We just don't need that. And I just think he's taken a lot of his son's glory away from him. He makes himself too central in the story. Just leave his son to get on with his career. And he doesn't have to be around everything. You know, we've seen it before when he was training his son. And you know what? We would have liked to have seen a bit more of Nate Vasquez, what he's got to say about what he did for Eubank Jr. But the old man just seems to make everything about him and just can't get out of the limelight. I'm just begging you, Big Chris, the sheriff of Oklahoma or wherever you're a sheriff now, because you can come and put me in handcuffs if I was in America saying this, because I'm abusing a cop. just lay off your son. Let him get on with his career because we love him. We love you too, but don't take the story away from him.
Wow, hell of a rant there, Steve. One thing I'll just say, right? So obviously, he, as a professional boxer, he saw the highest highs. He got that buzz, that incredible buzz. And one of the things you always hear about when fighters retire is you can never get that buzz back. He's actually in a position where he's got a son, and maybe he's just living vicariously through him. It's an opportunity for him to get that buzz back. Can you forgive him, Steve Lillis? Can you forgive him?
Look, I can forgive him for a lot of it. You know, he was fantastic in the build-up to the fight last week. You know, at the press conference, he was good, where he sort of hinted it was DeGale's mum and dad who didn't want George Groves off the broadcast. Yeah. He played the game perfectly. But afterwards, I just felt the story became Chris Senior. And not his son. That's just my feeling. And of course, he's most probably living his career again through his son. It's like in any sport, a footballer would live it through, you know, will live stuff through his son if he's doing well. But I just think a lot of the glory was taken away from Chris Jr. at the weekend because of his dad. Or the glory wasn't taken away from him because he won the fight. But a lot of the attention he might have got.
Good rant, Steve Lillis. Good rant. Kumbaya. Kumbaya.
Kumbaya. That was brilliant. That's what we love.
That's
Chris
good.
Doing
yeah,
that.
That's good.
I want to see Chris
good.
Doing more. It was fantastic. I wanted to see what happened after 20 seconds. That's what I wanted to see.
For any listeners who are unaware, there was a video that went viral last week of Chris Eubank Sr. Dancing to Kumbaya, and he was really putting the moves on. It was absolutely incredible, and that's why we like him. Good rant. Looking forward to one next week. Keep them coming. Love this segment. Let's do it every week. We do. Well, another week, another belter of a show. But before we go, Steve, you strike me as having some big news under your lid. Come on, what you got? What you got for me?
Yeah, some Box Nation news. We're back with live boxing this Saturday, March the 2nd, 1 a.m. as Saturday night goes into Sunday morning. We're in Columbus, Ohio for one of these Ludabella's Broadway boxing offerings. He usually has them around the New York area, but he's gone down to Columbus for this show. And it's a heavyweight special. We have a few heavyweight fights on. The main attraction is the unbeaten New Zealander, Junior Farr. He's 16-0. He's knocked out 9 or 10 of them. He's up against a Frenchman called Neufel Outar, non-title 10-rounder. Ludabella's trying to, you know, build Farr a little bit in America. He's number 8 with a WBO. And the big thing that I think they're really aiming him to before any world title is to settle this rivalry in New Zealand with Joseph Parker. Farr, unlike many New Zealand boxers, he had a strong amateur pedigree, and he fought Parker 4 times in the amateurs. It was 2 apiece, and Farr's no stranger to Britain. He was in 2013, he lived in Sheffield, and was a member of the British Lionhearts WSB squad, where he trained against, you know, alongside Joshua and Joyce. And he's been going well as a pro, and a couple of years ago signed with Ludabella. And the Frenchman he's up against, Outar, has been a pro for about 10 years. Only lost twice, but good men that have beaten him. Erkan Tepar and a fellow Frenchman, Johan Duapas, who's not the worst fringe contender.
Yeah, no, look, I just love that there's so many heavyweights coming through. So this Junior Farr fella who's looking for a fight with Joseph Parker, I love that he's coming through. There's so many youngsters coming through. Obviously, we've talked about Gorman, we talked about Dubois. What about Tony Yoka? What about Oscar Rivas, who beat Bryant Jennings? There's so many of them. So it's an exciting time. I'm looking forward to watching this one, Steve.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. I haven't seen Farr box before. I remember him in the WSP. I'm sure I saw him at York Hall once. So when I got told about this fight today, I looked him up and I can vaguely remember seeing him at York Hall. I'm sure he boxed for the Lion Arts there. And that's the great thing about Box Nation. We have world title fights most weekends, but we also bring you the upcoming fighters. I mean, where else would British fight fans get the chance to see whether Farr is a pretender or a contender? Only on Box Nation.
Well, let's watch that. Let's find out. Remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sarni Dev. Give at the Boxing Pod a follow on Twitter. Come and follow us. You know, you're more than welcome. Give us a retweet. Yeah, every now and again, tell a friend to tell a friend, and that will keep us in your ears. Needless to say, we are expecting no less than 5 stars. Every time you drop us a review on iTunes, we don't see 4, we don't see 3, we don't see 2, and we certainly don't see 1. Give us 5 stars. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.